Merry Christmas, happy holidays, Buffer Nation. It's so good to be with you on the Buffer Podcast, and we have got the biggest movie in a long time that we're going to talk about this week with Spider-Man No Way Home. It's good to be here. We're recording this on Tuesday, December 21st. So Christmas is on the horizon.
It's winter time.
It is. There's no snow in Muscatine, Iowa, where we're located, but we know that January and February will be rough, but for now it's okay. Christmas is coming up. And Joel, you know, is Spider-Man No Way Home a Christmas movie?
Maybe.
It's definitely going to be the thing that people are continuing to talk about. But nonetheless, we saw it in theaters and we're really pleased to be able to get together along with the special guest and talk about one of the biggest movies of certainly the last 2 years with Spider-Man No Way Home. So, Joel, we saw it at our local theater at 9:20 last Saturday.
And
it was about 85% full, would you say?
Yeah, it was pretty close to that, I would say. It was good to see, yes. I was actually surprised at how many youngsters were there. Yeah, it was, you know, first Saturday of the holiday break here for our school district. And it's good to see kids, I guess, back in the theater. And you got movies that people want to see. And I think that was the biggest thing. And I just drove by about an hour ago because I live right by our movie theater. And there's lots of cars in the parking lot tonight because Tuesday night at our local theater is discount popcorn night and discount ticket night. So I think lots of people taking advantage of lots of good movies out there. I don't know if any of you guys saw West Side Story, but it's really good as well. So
Did not see it because that one controversial cast member. So I'm out. Plus, I don't like musicals, but also, kind of a stinker at the box office. But you're saying it was good. Made no money.
The controversial cast member, I understand. But it sounds like it's one of those situations where I'm not taking his side. But it seems like there's a lot of gray area with that particular situation.
Well, welcome to the last episode of The Buffer because we're going to get canceled.
I'm trying to be that way.
Our friend Ben Nitzel is with us. He does movie reviews locally here in Muscatine. He, too, saw Spider-Man No Way Home. And you were there a day early, Ben, and you said it was just as crowded. Did you have that feeling for the first time in a while of, wow, this is what it's like to go to a big movie?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I've actually been going to a lot of movies since probably Tenet, which would have been, you know, about 14 months ago. I've been going to the theater. So, but this was by far the most packed. There's been a couple, I was trying to think what I had seen that maybe had a lot of people as well, because there have been a couple, but this was by far the most packed. Yeah, I'd say we were probably 90%. Like I said, there's at the theater in the big auditorium here in Muscatine, there's stadium seating, but then there's some floor seats as well. And the floor seats were pretty much full as well. So I'd say we were probably closer to 90-95% at the Friday night 9:20 showing. And people were like boisterous and cheering when some things happened, which I'm sure we'll come to in the discussion here. But so I hadn't heard that in a long time. So it was very impressive. I'd say that probably, to your point, Tony, probably the busiest it's been since I went to Skywalker.
Wow.
The Rise of Skywalker. Because that would have been what? December of 2019. So.
Yep. It's just crazy that the movie theaters and that industry has really struggled. And it's nice to see a blockbuster like Spider-Man No Way Home the way that it's intended. And that's on the biggest screen you can see. I'm kind of glad, and I don't know what you guys think, and it's not something I want to dwell on, but I thought about this, like, remember when everything was in 3D a couple of years ago and you like couldn't avoid it and you had to get, you know, the glasses, and then sometimes they had special glasses, and like the Rogue One glasses were really cool. Came up in a Facebook memory, but like, I'm kind of okay with movies not being like, I don't know what happened or what shifted. And certainly the pandemic probably helped that, but I don't know if that's something you guys have thought about. Like, it's kind of nice to not have to worry about, like, one less thing to have to worry about is, am I going to see it in 3D or 2D? And I mean, for a Spider-Man movie, it probably would have looked awesome, but
it's in 3D. We could have seen it in 3D.
It's in 3D.
Yeah. It's an option, but it just wasn't at the XL level at our local theater.
I guess my interest in that has just shifted. I don't know. Maybe that's just me, but I'm
okay with
that.
It's the crystal clear Pepsi of movies. It was supposed to be the wave of the future, and it's just not been.
Yeah.
Well, I think, you know, it really did kind of start to slow down pre-pandemic. I think that last kind of wave of Marvel movies, they weren't. It used to be like it was almost everything was in 3D, as you said, Tony. But I really feel like it's been about 5 or 6 years since that was really true of every movie that was coming out. And it did get to the point where, like with Avatar, that was amazing. Like, that was really great. That was a movie that was designed to be in 3D. The thing was shot for 3D. What it got to after that was they would throw a couple 3D shots in that weren't that great just so they could upcharge you $2.
Yep.
You know, and then they used to upcharge you $2 for the Excel Theater as well. So you were potentially looking at, if the show you wanted to go to, like for me, I always go after 9 o'clock. If it was 9:30 and it was in Excel and it was in 3D, it was a $4 upcharge to go to the film that you wanted to see at the time you wanted to see it. There was kind of no way around that. Yes, and I'm very glad to see that for the most part go the way of the dodo.
All right, so for this episode of The Buffer, we're going to talk a lot about Spider-Man No Way Home.
We'll have spoilers.
Yes, spoilers for sure. Peter Parker, he dead. He didn't die, so that was not a spoiler. But this, the format that we would typically follow is putting a piece of content up against another piece of content and debating that.
So here's my idea, the one that I said I was going to spring on you guys mid-pod.
Okay.
I think the buffer battle tonight is Spider-Man No Way Home versus the rest of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Is this the best MCU movie to date? Because that's something that is out there. It's been written about. I kind of believe in the hype. I think that's our battle, is the thing that we could litigate for a conclusion is, in our opinion, is this the best Marvel movie to date?
I have an immediate reaction, but I'll pause for a second. You know, you're talking about a lot of movies, but in a short-ish period of time since, what, really 2006 or 7 with Iron Man. But man, they've done a lot. They've done a lot of movies and a lot of different movies, and they've tried a lot of things. Yeah, that's a tough one. I don't want to start because my initial reaction is no, but I think it's definitely in a top three or five list for me. I think I want to defer to Ben, admittedly, I would say I'm more of a DC fan. Like, I would say The Dark Knight 2008 is better than anything I've seen collectively from DC and Marvel. That's my opinion. Ben is notorious Marvel fan, more so than I. So what do you think to that question? Is Spider-Man No Way Home, Ben Nitzel, the best Marvel Cinematic Universe film?
Did you want to start with that question, or are we building up
to that? I think we can build up to that question. I don't know that we have to start with it. I'm just saying that I think that's the battle.
Okay, I might need a few minutes to process that. I have an initial reaction as well, but maybe I just hold on to that for a second.
All right, well, let's dissect Spider-Man No Way Home. I didn't want to put anybody on the spot because I'm also thinking about what I like more than this. So here we go. Tom Holland, third film as your friendly neighborhood Spider-Man. You get right into it, right? So Far From Home ends and No Way Home picks up right where that ends, and we're thrust right back into his world. The movie looks good. You kind of have a semblance of what's going to happen. But man, there were so many great payoffs in it.
Quick question. Did you give the spoiler caveat? I assume you.
Yes. But we'll do it again. There will be spoilers from this point forward. So we'll give you a little.
They start early.
Yeah.
They start early.
We'll give you a few seconds to pause, go see the movie, or just, if you're going to listen, you're going to get it spoiled if you haven't seen it.
Skip ahead 60 minutes, everybody. There's just a lot going on. Spider-Man, his identity is out there. People know he's Peter Parker. He's zipping through the city with MJ and trying to find a safe place to go. And I appreciated that, you know, because the comment that I have about these these three movies is I think there's they could trim some of the fat, right? I mean, it's a lot of like teenagers and that awkwardness. And I thought there were a couple spots that I would have liked to see and getting tightened up a little bit. But what I appreciated about this movie is that it just got right into the action. That was awesome. Cause you're already like feeling good. There's a full crowd in the theater. You get through previews and everything, and then you're thrust right back into the world. And I guess for me, this trilogy, you know, I didn't see Far From Home in the theaters. I saw that later, but I enjoyed it. I've enjoyed the first two movies, but I don't think there was any way that, you know, knowing what I knew about this third one, that I wasn't going to enjoy it. I will say I watched maybe two previews and I avoided everything else. Like there were things that I had no idea were going to happen that just kind of happened in this movie. And it was so nice to have that experience. Were you guys able to avoid all of the major spoilers for this?
Yeah,
not really. I was, I tried. I mean, I don't seek that stuff out, but there was a whisper that somewhere I heard something about, like, you know, Tobey Maguire might be in it. And then it just, like, that made a lot of sense. But it was still a bit of a surprise because I didn't do any – I made no attempt to confirm if that was true or just speculation. But there were still a few surprises even still.
I only watched the first trailer. That was the only – and I turned off all – like I turned like keywords off in my social media so I don't get things in my feed. So I turned Spider-Man off in my feed. Mm-hmm. So, because Spider-Man is my favorite character of any comic character ever, and so that's these movies. All iterations of Spider-Man I really have enjoyed, and that's maybe why I think I'm leaning a certain direction in our ultimate question, because I just I'm a big fan of these three movies. I think Tom Holland is a fantastic Spider-Man, I was able to avoid all spoilers leading up to the night, so everything was kind of new.
You know, it's a really interesting discussion. I was thinking about this this weekend about just obviously, like, there's been a shift where a lot of, like, you know, often you'll watch a trailer, even just a set trailer from the theater, from the film, and you'll say, gosh, they just show you too much. I wish they would keep some of this to themselves and not show you so much. But, you know, the other side of that coin is you got guys who literally their careers are on the line, and so they want to throw out any kind of little bait or hook they can to get anybody in that theater and say, oh my gosh. So it's that balancing act. And while I lament that and wish they would show more courage, then I also thought, you know, in this day and age with the internet, it's so hard to not get some stuff spoiled anyway, that I'm sure the thought process is we might as well spoil a little bit more than we want to in the actual trailer to try to get people in, because we might get ruined anyway.
It's the whole control the narrative discussion. If they give you more, at least they can say, yeah, we're telling you, you're getting that from me. It's not the whole rumor mill and, you know, podcasters like us making predictions, you know, and people can see it. It's just it's not. I understand the marketing side of it. That's for sure.
I'll tell you what, I was so surprised, because again, I didn't know that when Peter needs to lawyer up after being interrogated by the Department of Damage Control, that Matt Murdock, aka Daredevil, aka Charlie Cox from the Netflix series, he's just sitting at the kitchen table. And I think I probably said something out loud, like just an audible, like, what? Okay, I had no idea.
You said, holy bleep, is what you said. That's the direct quote.
I was so happy to see him because for so long we didn't know if those Netflix series were going to exist in the same MCU. And it makes total sense to have Matt Murdock be Peter Parker's attorney, because that Netflix Daredevil series is just fantastic. So that for me was like the first moment of like, oh my gosh, I had no idea. From there, we find out that Peter and MJ and Ned all had applied to try and go to MIT together, and they all get rejected. And it's at that point that our friendly neighborhood Spider-Man's like, I got to go talk to Dr. Strange and see if he can do something to make people forget that Peter Parker is Spider-Man. And that was something that was alluded to in the trailers. But you still didn't really know exactly like how that was going to go down. And it's a great sequence. And Tom Holland as Peter Parker is perfect as he just continues to interrupt Doctor Strange as he's casting the spell. And you can tell like, okay, this is obviously how something's going to go awry. But just that interaction, the chemistry between Cumberbatch and Holland is great. Like, it's really good. And it has been good. But I think what you'll find out with this movie is that there were some delays with Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness, and then with how the direction of the Spider-Man movie took off, they ended up having to kind of change things in both this film and the Strange sequel. But what were the reaction from you guys with that Tom Holland, Cumberbatch, those initial interactions, and then when they're in the basement and he starts casting the spell?
Well, first, let me just step back and say I thought the Daredevil thing was probably my favorite part of the movie, just because I love Daredevil, the character, and I agree with you. I thought the Netflix series was some of the best stuff on Netflix. It was a nice tie-in. Of course, without going into spoilers, there's another character from that universe also that's recently appeared in Marvel. And so it's nice to see that they might pull forward some of that, because while not everything was a home run, some of it, especially the Daredevil stuff, was phenomenal. And so that was really awesome. I think they have, it's great chemistry between those two. And I think that was a very enjoyable part. It's almost like Doctor Strange has sort of stepped in the hole that was left, sort of the father figure hole left by Tony Stark. And it is great chemistry between those two actors. And it's very enjoyable when they're on screen together.
I like Benedict Cumberbatch. I know that I'm not necessarily everyone in the mainstream who looks at movies and watches movies likes the guy. I don't know if he's a jerk. I have no personal knowledge of any of that. But I think I've liked all of his movies. He's even as the voice of the Grinch in the animated Grinch a few years ago. But I just watched Power of the Dog on Netflix and really enjoyed it. They are good together. But I think that Tom Holland is actually just a really high level actor for even being as young as he is, because he, I think, gives a lot. And I think that when he's in a room with other high level actors, they can just go back and forth. I mean, there were moments in this movie where there were 7 to 10 Academy Award winning or nominated actors in frame. Like, it's crazy the level of talent that Marvel has in this movie. And I think, Ben, I know what you're alluding to with some of the other characters. I think I'm going to just make another spoiler warning, because I think we need to talk about it, because I think it's pertinent. There are some Hawkeye parallels. So if you haven't been caught up on the Hawkeye series, maybe hit pause here and watch the last two episodes of that. Because I think you're talking about Kingpin, who they make some versions of in the Hawkeye series. But if you go back and watch Spider-Man No Way Home, and I caught it, like, he swings past us Rogers the Musical marquee, and he's going over Rockefeller Center. So I think that there is some dovetailing between this timeline from No Way Home and the Hawkeye series, and I'm really intrigued as to how that may work itself together. I liked how detailed they were with this, and they shot things in a speed where you could catch it as it was going by. It wasn't like you had to go back and watch it 2 or 3 times and look up what Easter eggs you missed online. You could kind of see those if you were paying attention. So the Cumberbatch and Holland chemistry is very good, and then it all leads into the Zendaya Tom Holland chemistry, which I know it's alleged that they may be in a relationship off screen. They're fantastic together, like on screen. They play that earnest, just really, kind of Hollywood view of what a teenage relationship should look like. And they do it so well. And then that whole triumvirate of Ned, MJ, and Spider-Man and Peter Parker, it's so good. Just having the way that those three interact with one another. Very immature, but mature at the same time.
Yeah, what's nice is as the movie, just the pacing is very quick. Like I said, there are a couple moments where the composition or the exposition for me is like, okay, we can tighten this scene up maybe a little bit at the donut place. We could trim this, but what I'll say is, you know, you're very quickly at the Sanctum Sanctorum. Doctor Strange is casting a spell, I guess. Peter interrupts him, and then all of a sudden, the next thing you know, Peter's trying to track down an MIT administrator to have her reconsider MJ and Ned's applications. Then all of a sudden, here's Otto Octavius showing up. You know, and it's on, right? And there's a great moment where Peter's wearing the nanotechnology in his Iron Spider suit, and where he's able to bond that with Doc Ock's mechanical tentacles and take it over. Because if you remember from some of the previous Spider-Man movies, there's, you know, a lot of times when Doc Ock would grab Spider-Man and just, you know, have those tentacles do whatever they please. But there's that great moment where you see it happen and Doc Ock's like, wait a minute, this is not my Peter Parker.
Yeah, and that's the important part is that Doc Ock is from the Tobey Maguire second movie, which I'll step out real quick anecdote and I'll get back to it. I tried to recreate our first date with my wife the night that I proposed, and I wanted to go see The Terminal because we had seen a Tom Hanks airplane-based Catch Me If You Can movie on our first date, and she didn't want to go see it. So we went and saw Spider-Man 2. So that Spider-Man 2 and Doc Ock was the movie that we saw on the night that I proposed to my wife. So that's my immediate reverence for Doc Ock. That's all I can think. That's all I can think of whenever he was on screen is how terrified I was that particular evening.
There's just so much good, so much nice payoff or fan service when Doc, you know, Octavius takes off Spider-Man's mask and he's like, you're not Peter Parker. And then just as soon as that happens, Norman Osborn arrives and just gets right to work attacking Peter. But then in an instant, Peter is just teleported right back to Doctor Strange's basement, and he's got Kirk Connors locked up, Doc Octavius locked up, and Strange explains that, listen, you messed up my spell, and now there are people from other universes who know Spider-Man's identity are coming through, and this is what you're going to have to deal with. I really like the technology and the way that they went about capturing some of these villains, because the one thing that I'll say is when you're going to have a movie, Ben, with this many villains, I was worried because it wasn't 3 hours long. Like, how are you going to give them equal screen time? And I'm pleased to report that it's very balanced, I would say, right? Like, you have a ton of big villains, but I thought they did a really good job balancing everybody out.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, one of my critiques would be I felt like it was a little long with the runtime that it was. But yeah, I mean, there was a lot going on. You had a lot of villains, a lot of people getting pulled in. And so I thought that, yes, you no matter which one of those guys you liked from previous films, they got a little bit of a chance to shine or a chance to interact. Or so that was really interesting. It was well done the way they make it work.
So it's just such a big movie. Like, there's just so much to it. And I think I did have a moment where I thought, like, this is a lot to pack in. You know, Endgame, you understand what's going to happen and that there's going to be just the floodgates are going to open, so to speak, and all these characters are going to be there. But yeah, I thought that, you know, I was a little worried, like, okay, how are you going to make this happen? And that being said, like, Kirk Connors doesn't get a lot of screen time. You know what I mean? Like, there's, you know, he's kind of just, he's locked
is that,
up.
Is that the gator or the lizard?
Yeah. But what was great was giving Max Dillon, Electro, Jamie Foxx, a real good opportunity to kind of totally redo that character. And some of the things that I've read after seeing the movie are maybe alluding to, like, could that have been a variant? Was that the exact same one? But I think what it boils down to is Jamie Foxx wasn't happy with how Electro came out in The Amazing Spider-Man 2. And this was, they probably said, listen, we'll totally reconstruct this character for you if you agree to do it. Because it was really a different, totally different look when he's Electro. And just more, I don't know. I felt like that to me was the biggest turn outside of the de-aging that they were able to do on some of the actors, which was very seamless, by the way. But I was really happy with Electro in this movie.
So here's my question. So I was super nervous about this movie because the multiverse scares me. Because like we were talking before the pod and how the science fiction of the Matrix is not something that appeals to me. And I think that that's what made me nervous about this movie is the multiverse. I'm not a stupid person, but I also just want to be able to simply understand the movies that I'm going to and seeing. Do we think that they told us enough about the multiverse, or do we think that they handled it just right, or did they not give us enough?
Well, I think, and Ben would maybe agree or speak to this more, but I think what they're assuming is you've watched Loki, which deals with it or dealt with it. You've watched What If, which has dealt with it. You're familiar with Endgame, which is maybe more time travel than multiverse. But yeah, I felt like they expect the audience to be up to speed enough to not have to slam on the brakes and kind of hold your hand through what's happening. You can give Doctor Strange a couple pieces of dialogue that kind of explain it to a high school student in Peter Parker. And maybe that's where for somebody that's not as well versed. Does that make sense, Ben? Because I know that, you know, we're talking about MCU. It's so weird. I'm still in my brain. I'm thinking like Sony, Marvel, but it's just all MCU. And this is where after the fact, Kevin Feige and everybody's saying like, yep, all that stuff from What If is on the table. Like that might happen. Spider-Man in, you know, into the multiverse might happen. But what are your thoughts on that, Ben? Do you feel like they've done a good enough job explaining this multiverse?
Yeah, so a couple thoughts. Well, one, let me step back and say that I agree with you on the Electro stuff. I think that for me, I think Jamie Foxx might be the most talented actor in Hollywood today. Like, so to give that guy more screen time and make his character a lot cooler, pretty awesome. And when you just look at the range of talent that guy possesses in terms of, you know, acting chops, comedy, singing, the whole nine yards. So give more airtime makes a ton of sense. As far as the multiverse stuff, you had two things, right? One, I think absolutely. I think one thing that Marvel's been able to do in the last 5 to 7 years is say, listen, we have this huge body of work and we're going to stop pretending like people don't know about it. Because at this point, if you don't enjoy Marvel movies, you're not going. And smart and wisely so, right? And if you do enjoy them, you've seen them all, whether it's through Disney Plus, whether it's just the person who goes to all the films, you've seen enough to be dangerous. And so I appreciate that they've got there's some weaknesses, but this is the strength of the coherent system. This is the strength of creating something in 2006 and tying it all together, sometimes masterfully, sometimes loosely, is that you can just get through some stuff and then create some really amazing things out of that because you're not constantly reinventing the wheel. The other thing is it kind of dawned on me this week. I was thinking like, I wasn't a huge comic book guy. I used to read some of my friend's comic books because he got them and I didn't have the spare cash to get them. But what's so amazing about this is like, this is the film version of Marvel Comics, because you get these different writers and artists and they do these series, this Daredevil series or the Spider-Man series. They have the same thing with Batman, right? And so, and these aren't necessarily in some ways disjointed. This is where the multiverse comes from, because how do you have a series where they explore Daredevil killing Kingpin and the ramifications of that, and then 5 years later someone's writing and here comes Kingpin back? Like, these are, and so what's amazing is they've been able to figure out through this concept, we've got these Sony movies that are, you know, fairly well loved, and so with Tobey Maguire, we've got these movies with Andrew Garfield, we've got these different things happening from different companies. That is the movie equivalent of having different writers and different artists throughout the years that take these characters in interesting and different directions, so that it's not just an episodic Dick Tracy, like, oh, we're trying to capture, you know, Clayface, or I don't remember Dick Tracy fights, but you know, every week where it's the same kind of bag of chips. So I think it was like, for me, it was kind of like, not to oversell it, but a little mind blowing to sort of understand what was happening and how they're able to pull that stuff in and say, this stuff exists. And it's, but it wasn't part of this universe, but here's how we tie it in with this concept of the multiverse.
Yeah, they definitely have a huge canon at their disposal, and it is masterful, to your point, when it works and when it works really seamlessly. And I think that maybe, you know, because we're not too far into this MCU where you've got multiple you know, standalone superheroes in the same movie. I feel like Thor Ragnarok did it really well. You're going to have Hulk and you're going to have Thor. Okay, I'm with you. And there's definitely more to that. But there is something to be said, you know, when you start talking about, and Joel alluded to it, with all these Academy Award, you know, Willem Dafoe, and like you start looking at this and you're like, is this too much? But I think, Ben, you said it, like, they know what their fans want. They have the abilities to bring these stories together. And that's what leads me to when Ned discovers he's got Doctor Strange's sling ring and he can start to kind of open up some portals. And they're sitting in Ned's house.
His grandma's the best in that scene.
He's like, I really wish we could see Peter. And then the next thing you know, like, he opens a portal and in the background is Spider-Man. And it's in that moment that you start to feel the audience in the theater go, oh my gosh, is this? And then in walks Spider-Man, Andrew Garfield. And it's like, holy crap. Yes, I kind of thought it was going to happen. They did such a great job. Nobody said a word. No one answered the question, whether it was artful dodging or just kind of like saying it with a wink. But when he walks in, you're like, that was the moment of the movie where I felt like, okay, I'm so excited that he's here. Toby's got to be around the corner. And I almost didn't care what happened next. I certainly did, right? And what I should add is that Peter Parker's plan is to try and save all of these villains, because what we're told is that these villains are coming into this universe right as they're about to be killed by these other Spider-Men. So Peter's like, no, let's fix them, let's save them, we can. And that's maybe, you know, I don't know how you feel about that.
Well, that's Aunt May's influence. Aunt May's the driving force behind that. That's Marissa Tomei, another Academy Award winner.
When Garfield walks in and they are like, prove that you're Spider-Man. He's like, I'm not going to crawl on the ceiling.
He jumps up and bangs.
And then the grandma is like, can you get that cobweb? Absolutely fantastic.
Do you guys enjoy Andrew Garfield as much as I do? I really feel like he doesn't do very much wrong when he's acting.
Oh, I like that iteration of Spider-Man better than Tobey Maguire. Both because I like Andrew Garfield better than Tobey Maguire, and I also like what's her name? Emma Stone better than Chris Johns. I was all in on that. Plus, like I said, I like Jamie Foxx a lot. So yeah, I absolutely.
Dennis Leary as Emma Stone's dad in that movie.
Yeah, did people applaud? Like, that was one thing that was crazy. Yeah. It hadn't happened in a long time, but I'm not a big applaud person because my view, like, you know, it's not like any Andrew Garfield's there, but the theaters broke out in like cheers and applause, which was kind of exciting to be a part of that again, to hear that. So did that happen at the Saturday show?
Oh, 100%. At that point, you could almost, as Marvel, you could almost edit in like a 5-second applause break because they're just stepping over dialogue. And then Ned, you know, they get through this kind of interaction with Andrew Garfield, Spider-Man, and then they open another portal and there's Tobey Maguire, Peter Parker in plain clothes, and he has aged and he just kind of walks in. He's very nonchalant.
Dressed like a hip youth pastor. That was the line. So
he was just, I thought he was very nonchalant. And there's this great exchange where he and Andrew Garfield are like slinging webs at each other. And then the grandma's like, you're going to clean that up, right? Like,
well, and they're like, that comes out of you? That's like, both right. He and Tom Holland later on, they're like, where does that come from?
So, you know, from there, like, okay, they're going to team up with Tom Holland, Spider-Man, and they go and find him. And it's just it's a wild ride from that point on. But it's one of those things, like, to that point, it's a great movie. And from there, it just kind of steps on the gas and just gets even better. But I'm also thinking as I'm watching this, I'm trying to not look at the time and go, okay, you've got, because at that point, when you've got Tom, Toby, and Andrew together, there's what, maybe 60 minutes left in the movie, right? Maybe an hour 10, hour 20 at the most. It's a 2.5-hour movie. So there's a lot of work to do. Plus you've got all these villains, you know, that, you know, they've got to come together to capture them slash save them. But then also we kind of understand with this MCU that it's always easier said than done. And there's so many great moments towards the end. Well,
the key though too is the how when Doctor Strange with the spell, when he locks it down and preserves it and realizes it's going to go wrong, he basically creates the delete button. And so that creates that plot point where, you know, MJ and Ned are the keepers of this, you know, delete button. And now, you know, Tom Holland as Spider-Man is trying to fix. He takes him to Happy's condo where he's got the fabricator, where he does fix Doc Ock. I mean, he does rectify his malady and creates, you know, a benevolent Doc Octopus. But that's when then the whole, you know, the whole J. Jonah Jameson, J.K. Simmons character is now sole purpose is to figure out to move the plot, but keep the camera on Spider-Man and keep the camera on what he's doing so that he can, you know, out this person for the monster that he is. And so that helps keep the whole action going, because that's when we see the heel turn. That's when we see Green Goblin prove that this is all a ruse and he's just self-preservation. And is there a better villain just in movies than when Willem Dafoe decides he wants to be the bad guy? That guy just kicks ass as a villain, and he's so good as the Green Goblin. And you know, he has, now he's got, you know, all the other, you know, folks. It's Sandman. We haven't even talked about Thomas Hayden Church as Sandman. And his reveal, you know, in the whole Electro shot was pretty cool too, because he ends up saving, you know, Tom Holland as Spider-Man. And I liked how they say, okay, these people all know a Peter Parker. That's why they're here. But they kind of stuck to the script at that point. They didn't keep adding more and more aspects of those, you know, torn, you know, timelines, torn realms. And so that's, I think, what helped it move at the pace that it did, because it could have been worse. They could have kept having wrinkle after wrinkle after wrinkle keep coming. They were succinct, I think, in how they kept that all moving, because they could have gotten long, like Ben said, even longer than it was.
Yeah, I think what's so amazing for the audience as you're seeing through this film is there's so many times in the last 30, 40 years of watching shows that you're like, it would be so cool if this happened. But because of the movie studio politics or because of money or because of rights, it just couldn't happen. And this was like amazing because you had all these different Spider-Men pulled from which, you know, we all know the broken down fourth wall of the different studios that have rights to this, and you got to get this, but then you got to get the actors on board. So to see it all at once, I think that was for a lot of people just like, wow, this is like getting 1987 Hulk Hogan to somehow wrestle Sting. You know what I mean? And but that would never could have really happened, right? Or this is getting Batman to fight against, you know, Magneto or whatever it is. So it was amazing to kind of see that. And my only complaint where they couldn't throw something back is I was so bummed out that I thought that we were going to get Jon Favreau calling multiple times to leave a message a la Swingers and just making it more and more awkward. That was the only spot that this movie fell down where I would have probably lost my mind if they could have done something with that. Already was, you know, going to the breakup and just reminding himself he has big teeth.
Phenomenal. I think
the big claws.
The world needs more Swingers references. The biggest surprise for me, besides how great the reveal of the Spider-Men I didn't know that Aunt May was going to meet her demise. And that's a pivotal moment in the film, because it really, you see Tom Holland's Peter Parker, Spider-Man, he kind of fractures a little. And it's at that point, that's where the arrival of Toby and Andrew kind of are able to say like, hey, we've been there. We've been through exactly what, and that's where the moment on the roof of the high school is so great, because Tom Holland is he's just so distraught over losing her. And they have this unbelievable thing in common, which is great loss, great power, great responsibility. And you feel like wow, this is going to work. Like, they're going to team up. But then even still towards the very end, there's a moment where Tobey Maguire has to jump in and stop Tom Holland, Spider-Man, from killing Willem Dafoe's Green Goblin. So he, as much as he was trying to get through that anger, there was that moment where, and that was kind of, I don't know, like, I guess you talk about Tom Holland's range, Joel, like, that was another side of him that I don't think I've seen, is where he had, you know, we saw him deal with the loss of Iron Man, Robert De Niro, Tony Stark, but we didn't see a loss like this and what that did to him.
Robert Downey Jr. Just, you said Robert De Niro. I don't mean, I like
to say De Niro.
Yeah, I don't like to correct you, but that's a big one.
that is a huge one. But no, it was just, I don't know. That was really intense. I didn't know she was going to die. It was kind of a tough scene, and then like a SWAT team shows up and they're like shooting at him and he gets shot at one point. So I don't know what you guys thought of that. And then that ending moment where you think he's going to kill the Green Goblin. Like, for a second, I thought he's going to go through with this. And then Tobey Maguire steps in to stop him.
Well, for me, I think that all the sort of best superheroes, whether it's Batman or Iron Man or who, like, there's sort of something about them that is sort of very relatable. And so for Spider-Man, it's this coming of age. It's the eternal optimism of youth, right? It's this idea that I can always, and you see this in this movie, right? I'm going to save these five guys. I'm going to turn them around their lives. So when they go back, they don't die. And that is very much like the optimism of youth. But then that at some point that meets up with this sort of the reality of the real world, which is no matter how much power you have, no matter how much skill you have, no matter how much you want to do the right thing, at some point tragedy will befall you. And how do you then relate to that tragedy, right? So this is sort of, in my opinion, this is sort of the zeitgeist, the dynamic that makes Spider-Man compelling as a character, right? How that, when that optimism of youth, which we all had, meets the reality of growing up and the finality of death at some point for those that you love, and there's sometimes just nothing you can do. How do you then deal with that? I think that's powerful, right? I mean, that is the crux of what makes Spider-Man a compelling character on a deeper level than just cracking jokes and swinging through the city, which is also cool.
Yeah, I wasn't concerned that he was going to actually kill him, largely just because of what the rating was of the movie. Sure. I think if this was a rated R movie, which I'm glad it's not, I know that's kind of the trend, is to try to make some of these rated R, you know, comic book movies, but I'm glad they didn't. I never expected it. I was kind of bummed when Green Goblin stabbed Tobey Maguire. Like, I saw it coming. I knew it was coming, but I mean, it's a bio. I'm so emotionally invested, I guess, in the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man. He's not my favorite, but he's the first, I guess, you know?
Sure. And it's a non-life-threatening stab, which is good, because maybe his little scar tissue, he's able to go back to his universe. But I just think what's nice about this movie is it doesn't really have a happy ending. And I think that's, I don't want to say it doesn't end on a, I mean, it's kind of melancholy for a moment, but like, it doesn't have the sometimes, you know, stereotypical, you know, everything. Let me put it this way, and it's maybe a bad comparison, but I'm going to go there. Kong versus Godzilla, kill one of them, right? Don't have it end in a tie, essentially. Like, Spider-Man No Way Home, there's all this turmoil, but I'm still thinking, to Ben's point about that optimism, like, oh, you know what? Strange is going to cast this spell at the end, and he's going to make everybody forget. Everybody forgets that Peter Parker's Spider-Man. But I thought for a moment, Strange is going to throw in, oh, you know what? Ned and MJ are going to remember. And that's going to kind of be that moment where they walk into the coffee place and MJ goes, Peter, what are you doing? Like, I know who you are. So I was waiting for that to happen. And when it didn't happen, I was like, wow. So they're really not messing around. Like, he's going his own way, and he's going to choose to get that apartment and to live as Peter Parker, Spider-Man. He makes his own suit, which is kind of an homage almost to the Tobey Maguire one. But I don't know, that surprised me, guys, that lack of, you know, putting a bow on the ending. And I appreciated it, by the way.
Like, that. Didn't you also like have perhaps a fear that this really didn't happen? that it was Doctor Strange using like the time stone to like create some kind of alternate reality where Peter experienced this and then realized the error of his ways, that sometimes you just have to live in the mess in which you make. It's somebody's trying to, you know, almost like the, since we're in the season, the Christmas Carol, the idea that you can, you know, so you just have to appreciate where you are. And when you look back at things, it's not the same. And if you change things, you know, so I don't know if that's, you know, I was, that was kind of always in the back of my mind too. Is this all going to be an elaborate ruse?
Well,
you know, you're all kind of in on it. I'm glad it wasn't.
You said in the theater, Tony, that you thought that that was a Doctor Strange imposter at one point. Like you said that to me. I didn't understand where you were going with that.
Yeah, that Mephisto or Mephisto, however you say it. I mean, there was a lot of speculation that, well, this Strange is acting, Doctor Strange is acting very strange or not like himself. He's not dressed like he normally would. And we see that in, by the way, stay, because there's two credit scenes, and talk about the optimism of youth as Joel and I are telling high school students after the mid-credit scene, hold on. There's another one. It's so nice to do that. And then you get this incredible Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness trailer, the first look at it. And there is what is either evil Doctor Strange or Mephisto. I don't know how to say it. But yeah, so that was really nice to see that and to see what's going to happen next. I've also read since seeing the movie that because a Spider-Man No Way Home makes at this point, the total at the box office is $638 million. So it's easily going to eclipse $1 billion. Not only are we not done with Tom Holland as Spider-Man, we're not opposed to Andrew and Toby coming back if they wanted to and if it made sense. And I thought, if it makes sense, you just tore open the fabric of the universe and we saw what's out there. So
are we getting a Miles Moreno too at some point?
Morales,
I mean, yeah. Miles Morales,
probably. Why not, right? I mean, I thought, I told you in the theater, Joel, I'm like, are we gonna see Spider Pig? Like, is that, are they gonna start just bringing every, like,
I think if Mulaney hadn't gone to rehab, maybe that he's the voice of Spider Pig. So, but
here's what I'll say. Spider-Man No Way Home, it exceeded my expectations, and I was really appreciative of that. I wasn't going in expecting to not like the movie. I was just really worried about, can they pull this all off? And I don't know if you guys felt the same way, but it exceeded my expectations. And that was a really nice thing to have happen, because it hasn't happened in a while with a movie of this scale.
So that's why I'm going to say, in my opinion, which, whatever, take it for what you wish, what you want, is that this is, in my opinion, the best Marvel movie in the MCU so far. And my reasoning for that is, it's the first one that I can remember, and this might have some recency bias, and then I'll fine, whatever. It's the first one that I, in a long time, that I can think of, man, I really want to go see it again. And I'm looking forward to seeing it again. I know Endgame was important. I know Infinity War is super important. But I haven't rewatched those since I saw them in the theater. I mean, it's not because I didn't like them. It's just because I can't justify the 3 hours again to sit down and watch them. I would have no problem justifying that 2 hours to go back and see, or 2 hours and 15 minutes to go watch Spider-Man No Way Home. And it's because they do such an elegant job of not making this multiverse annoying or boring or so sci-fi that it loses me. And I think in my opinion, that's why I like it the most. So
I feel like I could guess, maybe I could guess that Ben is going to disagree. And I almost feel like I know what he would pick for his favorite, but I'll let you speak, Ben, because I think it's going to be interesting to hear your thoughts. Is Spider-Man No Way Home the best MCU movie to date?
No, I would say it's kind of third. So, and let me explain, I'll try to be concise, but like for me, number one, 100% has got to be Infinity War. Infinity War is an unbelievable achievement on a lot of levels. To pull all those strings together for basically, what was it, 15 years, and to have it come off that good, that big of a payoff, all those different actors, everybody getting their time to shine, and then having serious, non-ironic conversations with people saying, I think Thanos is right. I think we need to, like, if you had half the people here, life would be so, I mean, like, to have a bad guy that people are unironically agreeing with their motives, even if I disagree with their agreement, but like, it's an unbelievable movie. When you think about some of your favorite TV shows and how difficult it is after 5 seasons, 7 seasons, 10 seasons to land the plane and deliver something that's actually really good. Infinity War is just unbelievable. It's next level for me. If you like that stuff, it's just a culmination. Now, I would have a discussion with you about whether it's better than The Dark Knight. The Dark Knight might be better than Infinity War. It's just a standalone film, but we're just talking Marvel, so we'll save that perhaps for another day. To me, number two is probably Guardians of the Galaxy, even though that's not even probably in my top five, just because you made a movie about characters nobody knew about, one of which is a raccoon, one of which is a tree that can only say one sentence, and then you threw in like some 60s and 70s like power music, and like, and it was unbelievable. It was a huge hit. People loved it. It became a house. Like, that achievement of making a movie that by all rights should have been hot garbage into a blockbuster. And then for me, number three, and the reason I say Spider-Man's kind of number three, is I think probably the third best Marvel film is whichever superhero is your favorite, their best film. So for me, I'd say number three is Winter Soldier, because Captain's my guy. I love Captain America. I think that movie's unreal. I also love Black Panther, so I'd put Black Panther probably 4 just below Captain America, because I love that character too. But if Spider-Man's your favorite, Joel, then I'd say, hey, Spider-Man, this is the best Spider-Man film out of any of them they've made. I'm including the one from the late 70s as well that I saw on Laserdisc. And so it's better than that. And so if Spider-Man's your guy, this is probably, I would put that at number 3. But I think those other two just stand above it. Number 1, because Guardians is... to make that movie good is an achievement itself. And then again, Infinity War, it's hard for me to go beyond that. It's just so good.
Yeah. Guardians is definitely, I'm with you, Ben. It by all accounts, it shouldn't have worked, especially when you talk about a James Gunn as a director who is at the time known for Trauma Vision movies. Right. Yeah. So, but that's where, to Kevin Feige's credit, and we've said it ad nauseum, Kenneth Branagh directed the first Thor movie, guys. Kenneth Branagh is like, who would have ever thought? So I'm not saying that Thor is in my top three, but as far as like the appreciation of what this company, this studio has continued to do, and we see that even with like a Shang-Chi, which is unbelievable. I'll tell you what I regret is not seeing that in the theaters and watching that on my TV. That is
definitely, it was awesome.
It's unbelievable. It's in my top three, I would say, for sure in my top five. But yeah, I'm with you. I think Guardians is there. I love Winter Soldier. I also really enjoyed Ragnarok for how kind of weird it was. And yeah, so I think between Guardians, Ragnarok, Winter Soldier, but then I'm just looking at this list, guys, and there's just to give you an example, I pulled this up right now, and whether you agree or not with Rotten Tomatoes, they aggregate reviews, right? So let me just burn through this really quickly. Rotten Tomato, as far as where things are in the MCU, Black Panther is number 1 with 96% is their score. Endgame is number 2 with 94%. Tied with that, essentially, Spider-Man No Way Home. Then you've got the first Iron Man. You've got Thor Ragnarok at number 5. Shang-Chi at number 6. Spider-Man Homecoming at number 7 with 92%. Guardians of the Galaxy at number 8. The Avengers at number 9. And then Spider-Man Far From Home at number 10. Now, what's crazy is that outside of their top 10, at number 11 is Captain America Civil War, followed by Winter Soldier, Doctor Strange, and then it kind of gets into some other ones. But there's so many movies in this universe. That's what's insane. Like, you really can't go wrong. I think if you had to pick the one that you could tell people to skip because it didn't work for me, that's always going to be Thor the Dark World, because it's just bad in my opinion, right? Like, you don't need it. But outside of that, I can't sit here and say that I'm skipping a lot of these movies. I haven't seen Eternals, I'll admit that, but everything else on the list and in this canon are things that I've seen and enjoyed. So, but I wouldn't put Spider-Man No Way Home at number 1. It's very good. And what's crazy, of course, is that in you know, a year from now or less, we could be having the same conversation with whatever is coming next. You know, like, it's just, it's a great time to be consuming content. There is no shortage of, whether it's streaming with Hawkeye being a surprise hit.
I love that show. I'm loving it.
It's very good. It's very good. So it's just a great time to consume content. And if you haven't done so, please get out to your local theater and support movies like Spider-Man and even some of the smaller ones that are coming out. But Joel's putting it all on the line. He's ride or die, Peter Parker, huh?
I hate him. No shame. No shame here. I love Spider-Man.
I would say, like, I really don't want to nerd out, but Ben mentioning Winter Soldier, there's so many sequences in these movies where the action is just phenomenal, right? Like, you could have a whole podcast just dissecting, like, what's the best fight scene or sequence in a Marvel movie?
It's the stair one between Bucky and Captain America. That's the best fight scene maybe in the history of movies, not just the Marvel universe.
Yeah, there's just, if you think about how many great moments there are, it's really exciting. And what's great for you guys is that March 4th, when the Batman comes out, it's just going to blow all of these out of the water. It's not even going to matter. It's going to be so good. It's going to be...
I'm excited for that movie as well.
Robert Pattinson Ben is based versus off of the world.
Will he sparkle in the daylight? Will we know that it's that's the Batman? That way he comes out at night? Listen, I hope it's good. I think Batman's probably my second favorite superhero of all time. And you mentioned the Dark Knight trilogy, which is unbelievable, and it's probably the best three movie comic book series, you know, even though maybe the third one stumbled a little bit, but I still really enjoyed it. I'm hopeful. I hope it's great. I hope it's great.
Peter Craig, the screenwriter for the Batman, ties into the Marvel universe as well, as his real life mother is the Aunt May of Andrew Garfield. Sally Field is Peter's That's actual awesome. Mother. So wasn't she Superman's mom too in the DC? So he's got the bloodlines for both universes. So he just wrote that movie. The Unforgivable, that's on Netflix right now too. I've kind of been into this guy lately. He's hit some real home runs his last couple screenplays.
As we wrap up, I wonder, Ben, for you, and you don't have to answer this, and maybe there's a future piece in the local paper, but assuming a Spider-Man No Way Home is probably in your top five list as far as things you were able to see in 21, right? What I want to ask is, does Ghostbusters Afterlife make that top five list?
Oh, that's a great question. I would say that Ghostbusters Afterlife is probably in the top five best movies that I saw, or shows that I saw in 2021. But if it was what I most enjoyed, it would not be. Simply because I think that, like, it's a well done movie that's really exciting, and I think will get people to buy back into the franchise. But for me, Ghostbusters was a comedy that had some action that set the platform, and that movie Afterlife is sort of light. It's an action movie though with some failed attempts at comedy, and so I consider Ghostbusters the original my favorite comedy of all time. So for personal enjoyment wise, I would not put it in my top five. But I think if you're talking about overall quality of movies, and if you're saying to somebody that I don't know, that doesn't have this huge tie up to the first one, you know, from back in the 80s, what are the five movies you need to check out from this year? It's definitely in the top five.
And I know that Ben's excited, and he was going to mention it. January 14th, he'll be with me front row center for Scream, which is back, right? Scream, back.
No, hey, as much as I hate horror movies, I did see the Scream movies because they're not quite, they're a little freaky, but you know, I probably won't go to that.
How about the first Scream turned 25 years old? I can tell you that I was 13. I was at the Lake Theater in Oak Park, Illinois, where I grew up. It was a 10 o'clock screening, and that movie scared the crap out of me. And it still does. I love it. It's great. I don't know what to expect with this new one, but I'll be there, and I might be by myself because I know
I'll go with you. I like the Scream movies. I like the Scream movies.
Don't you just make David Arquette the killer and then be done with it, right? Like, let's just be done with it. I don't I don't know. All right. Speaking of things we're going to be done with, we're going to wrap up this podcast. Spider-Man No Way Home is a very, very good movie. It is worth seeing on the big screen. And it is something that I feel like if you don't see it and you didn't listen to this podcast because of spoilers, like it's going to be, it's in the zeitgeist and we're getting to that point. It'll be number one again at the box office this weekend, no doubt, heading into Christmas. But just go see it, you know, be as
you don't safe think you don't think a movie like Sing 2 could overtake it.
There's no way. There, I mean, Joel, you're talking about Spider-Man did like $30 million yesterday, which would be Monday. So it's just steamrolling, right? It's just
some of these animated ones, though, they surprise you. They get everybody, not just 85%. I'm not going to bet on it. I'm just asking the question.
Oh, you're such a non-better all of a sudden. Put like a, you know, a lunch on it, because there's no way. I mean, I would go as far as saying this weekend, even if you're just looking at Friday through Sunday, Spider-Man will eclipse easily domestically in the States, 100 million, no doubt.
Where does Ben's fellow UNI Panther American underdog fall in the box office this weekend as it comes out? The Kurt Warner story. I want to see it. I'm just curious. What do you guys think?
I'm not going to see that.
I just want to see it for the Hy-Vee sequences when he's working at the old Hy-Vee in Cedar Rapids, right?
It'll be interesting, though, because of all the stuff with, you know, COVID, I think, makes people a little bit more judicious on what they do and don't go. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with the box office this weekend, because you've got, of course, Matrix is releasing. You've also got the Kingsman releasing as well. So those potentially can be some roads, but those movies also might get buried because people might just say, well, I went to Spider-Man. I'm not going to go to another one now for a while. So it'd be interesting to see what does happen, what the shakeup is, and what people choose to go to or not go to.
Well, I think like in the markets like Chicago, I think that they just announced today that you're going to have to provide proof of vaccination to even get into a movie theater. And
starting January 3rd. So you got time, right? So I think here's the thing. The sign of a good movie is this. Would the two of you go see Spider-Man No Way Home in the theaters again, knowing that it is tougher to see things like movies in theaters? Would you go again if you had the opportunity?
Yeah, I think I'm taking my 10-year-old tomorrow.
Nice.
Yeah, I still go all the time regardless. So I'm a bad one to ask. But yeah, I mean, I started watching the Spider-Mans with my oldest two kids because we started off with Iron Man. I'm like, oh, I forgot. We might still be 2 years out on Iron Man. They're 10 and 9, and we might wait 2 more years. But the Spider-Mans are not too bad. So, but if we got through the other ones, and it was still in the theaters, I would definitely consider going back and taking them, because I think it's, to your point, great to see in the theater. With all the sound, the big screen, the whole nine yards, it's impressive.
The only thing I'm going to complain about is we slide out the door. It was so busy when we went to see Spider-Man. I didn't even have time to order my loved pretzel because I didn't want to tie up. Because for some reason, they got to do the whole thing. It's a whole thing to make the big pretzel. Can we just have it pre-made under the heat lamp? I don't need it to go through the oven thing in the back, and then you got to stand off to the side. Let's just get a heat lamp, throw a couple pretzels in there. That's my only gripe. I had to forego the pretzel for the Diet Dr. Pepper and the box of Milk Duds, which is very, very grown up of me, by the way.
It seems like a lot of theatrics.
We need to get you back to getting that pretzel with the cheese sauce, because I have a good idea where that cheese sauce comes from, and we need to sell more of it.
Need a nice, quiet Fast and the Furious 15 to come out so I can go and order my pretzel and watch it in peace. I'm just kidding. Those movies are very popular.
Maybe smuggle in a Corona, bro.
All right. Listen, thank you for checking out the Buffer Podcast special edition talking about Spider-Man No Way Home. You can subscribe to this podcast wherever you get your podcasts: Apple, Spotify, Google, anchor.fm.
Before we go, one last thing. It's Christmas week. Yes. Just off top of your head, gun to your head, best Christmas movie. What's your favorite Christmas movie? Not best. What's your personal favorite Christmas movie?
I'll give you a top five because I had it plotted out and it's going to be something that gets shared out on the Buffer Facebook page. My personal top five, one through five, first being my favorite: Christmas Vacation, Christmas Story, It's a Wonderful Life, Home Alone, Elf, honorable mention, Just Friends, and The Muppet Christmas Carol. That's where I'm at.
You got anything, Ben?
Yeah, well, I would say number one is Christmas Story. Number two is probably Christmas Vacation. Number three is Home Alone. Number four is Ernest Saves Christmas. Wonderful Life is in my top three favorite movies of all time. That also, like Die Hard, I don't consider a Christmas movie in the sense of they could take place anytime. Like Wonderful Life is set at Christmas, but a lot of the movie doesn't happen at Christmas. I watch it every year at Christmas. I might go watch it tonight with a couple drinks because I like to watch it once a year. But I know the last scene happens on Christmas Eve, but it doesn't have to. So for that reason, I'm going to disqualify it. And I mean, there's nothing better than that. You'll shoot your eye out for Christmas Story. It's unbelievable. And did that predate Wonder Years? Do you guys know?
Yeah. 83.
That's kind of the catalyst for
Christmas Story is 83. So I think Wonder Years.
So then definitely. Yeah, definitely did.
Yeah. So good. Krowski, what do you got?
National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation's my number two. My number one is Home Alone. And I kind of lump Home Alone and Home Alone 2 into one thing. I know they're the same movie, just repeated different ways, but those are the two staples that even when they're on cable, like in July, like when they do the Christmas in July or whatever, I will watch Home Alone anytime it is on. And I'm just very thankful that none of you said Die Hard and that Ben, you alluded to it, that it is, while it takes place at Christmas, it is not a Christmas movie. I also rewatched Gremlins a couple nights ago, just to kind of screen it to see, because there are some youngsters in my house who are interested in it. And I said, absolutely not after rewatching it. Also, totally, though, the whole Santa Claus runner and that, not only is it dark about who dies in the chimney, but she flat out says, and that's how I learned a certain thing. So, yeah, really glad I decided to screen that one prior to firing it up, because
boy, nothing like Christmas nightmares for the kids with Gremlins. Oh my gosh. All right. Listen, Merry Christmas. Happy holidays, everybody. Ben, thanks for being here. Looking forward to continuing to read your reviews in the newspaper, which are always very well thought out. And I'm excited, really, guys, I'm excited for 2022 because there's a lot of good, you know, COVID caused this log jam and there's so much content. I mean, we're just going to continue to have things to talk about, and that's a good thing. So Ben, thanks for being here. We appreciate it.
And Merry Christmas. Thanks for having me on, guys. Appreciate it.
All right, Joel, we'll do it again soon with the Buffer. We're also going to be jumping on Hunk with Mike Bridenstine to kind of talk about the year in review 2021 with movies and TV shows and streaming content. So check that out. And until we meet again, take care, everybody.